the early hours of the morning on June 28, 1969, police raided the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar located in New York City's Greenwich Village, in one of the many state-sponsored crackdowns on gay communities during the 60s. The Stonewall raid did not go as planned, however, when patrons gathered outside the bar and began protesting. The spontaneous show of defiance became the now famous Stonewall Riot, a defining event that gave rise to the LGBT rights movement in the U.S. nearly 43 years ago. While a number of popular books and films have chronicled the modern gay rights movement and notable activists, the lives and musings of gay figures from centuries ago are largely obscure to the general public. Performance artist and activist Ian McKinnon and activist Wendell Jones sought to change that with their play Gay Histergy, Parts 1 and 2. In a solo performance, McKinnon takes the audience back in time to visit gay figures both famous and obscure, from Plato to Allen Ginsberg, to expose lesser-known acts of defiance and musings on homosexuality. Delving deeper, the Gay Histergy asks the question, what is gay love? And McKinnon looks for answers from great figures in philosophy, psychology, poetry, and art. The dense material is made light with a racy script and campy performance. Gay Histergy returns to L.A. for a month-long run starting July 6th at the Hyperion Arts Station in Silver Lake. The play shows in L.A. every Friday night in July at 8 p.m. at Moving Arts Hyperion Station, located at 1822 Hyperion Avenue. Wendell Jones and Ian McKinnon now join me in studio. Welcome to Uprising, Wendell Jones and Ian McKinnon.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's
Thanks
great
so
to be
much
here.
For joining us. It's great to have you here. Well, tell us how this play, Gay Histergy, began, how it was conceptualized. It's a two-part play showing this July. Where did it all start?
Well, it began when I found out about the grandfather of the gay rights movement, Karl Heinrich Ulrichs. I've been doing performance art in L.A. for years and started to research his work and found that it was really exciting and that his quotations and stuff were still contemporary. And so I wrote a short little piece where I, where Karl was my boyfriend, and Wendell came to see it and afterwards said that, you know, that he could help me with the writing of it.
But it, so it started out with just this one person. Who was he?
Karl Heinrich Ulrichs was a German lawyer in the 1860s, and he's the first person to speak out publicly for gay rights back in the 1860s in Germany.
Why is it important to put a history of, you know, and exactly how do you even call this? Is it a history of the gay rights movement, history of gays in the literary field, or well-known people who might have been gay? I mean, how do you describe
it? Well, it developed.
This?
Originally, it was we were centering on gay people from history. But as we started working together, we realized that what we wanted to be talking about was gay psychology and gay consciousness. I work with I'm the webmaster at uranianpsych.org, which is a website for the Institute for the Study of Contemporary Uranian Psychoanalysis. And that's a radical group of gay therapists. And as we started looking at the history of it, we realized that the way people talk about gay liberation today, it's like there was a Stonewall uprising, people fought back. Now we're fighting for the right to be married like regular heterosexual families and to go and kill people in the military. And I thought, this is not what gay consciousness is all about. You know, there is something beautiful and important in gayness. And Ian and I realized we had a real kind of same, we had the same skewed humor, but also an interest in looking at something much deeper and beautiful and spiritual and radically political, you know, which is fine for a show that's like insurrection or, you know?
So you, how did you pick then who you wanted to profile in your play? Karl Ulrichs is one person, but what about the rest? And how did you even determine which historical figures? Because not everybody was out in the past.
Of course.
In fact, most weren't, right?
Right.
Right. Well, we kind of looked at guys who were inspired by their gay love to create some kind of great work of art or philosophy or political movement. And also I kind of followed the eros of it, you know, and we did a ton of research on the show and it compiled, you know, all sorts of names and all sorts of stories, and then it was like, okay, which guy is the hottest, you know, who's sexiest, you know, because the concept of the show is that I have a fetish for gay history and then travel through time making love to all these men or cruising them and getting the political information.
And some of them are really well known. I mean, Walt Whitman?
Sure. Yeah, we do Whitman and Herman Melville and Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln.
Yeah, yeah. He shared a bed with a man named Joshua Speed for 4 years.
And this is a fact?
It's a fact. Oh, yeah.
The Stonewall Republicans, I mean the Log Cabin Republicans, mm-hmm. which are these kind of creepy gay Republicans,
who challenged the don't ask, don't tell policy in the
right,
military.
But they used the term Log Cabin Club to reference Abraham Lincoln, because he was a Republican.
I always wondered about that.
Yeah.
That's
the log cabin.
Yeah.
Huh.
But we were interested, I think, also as we started getting all of these various people, and you could look at like China, which had like the longest history of tolerance for like a few thousand years. Mm-hmm. Gay people were treated with respect, and we started finding out about that. But we started finding certain links between some of our favorite people. Like Socrates, and then later the Sufi mystics, who had very similar ideas that there was something in the gay experience that made us different from people who just had children and families. Socrates talked about there being a separate goddess of love for people who create children of the mind instead of babies. That's what we would call homosexuals today. And he believed that when a gay man just fell wildly, passionately in love with another person, he would start having this experience of an inner voice that he called his daemon or a spirit that talked to him. We would call that today becoming more of an individual. Psychologists call it like individuating. Becoming more truly who you are. We had read a bunch of stuff from a psychologist, Mitch Walker, who talked about listening to this inner voice being a way to not be a conformist who wants to be part of the society where you eat everything up, you destroy everything, you turn one person against the other, and all your life is watching television and consuming while the planet goes down the toilet. That there was this history of people who said, no, the gay experience is about becoming a true individual, listening to a voice in your heart, in your mind that comes out of gay love. And that's how we started picking people like Socrates and these various mystics and then other people along the way that we found.
So it isn't just a history of a high-profile historic gays, but people who were deeply philosophical.
Oh, yes.
That you were looking at, people who questioned our existence, et cetera.
That's the whole purpose of the show in one way is to try and look at the gay experience as the most exciting, wonderful thing that could happen to you. Not just as, you know, it's going to get better and you won't get bullied so much, but actually you can have a wonderful time and be inspired to create art, revolution, poetry. There are people like Bayard Rustin who worked with Martin Luther King, who is a gay man who was inspired by a voice in his heart to really try and spread nonviolence around the planet. So that's how we started picking people, was who was listening to something in the gay experience that made them unique.
And so this isn't just a U.S. history. This is a global history.
Yeah, it's world history and mostly ancient history from ancient China to about the turn of the century. In fact, yeah, there's very few Americans in the show. It's mostly Renaissance and, you know, in European history. And
Who from European history stands out to you in your play?
I love Il Sadama.
Il Sadama.
Yeah.
He was this totally outrageous Renaissance painter who actually signed all of his paintings The Sodomite, which is what Il Sadama means. And he was actually publicly stoned.
Wow.
Or nearly stoned. Escaped.
Yeah.
They did throw stones at him.
Yeah, but you know, he survived and kept doing it, still continued
and
to
sign. And what was his sort of contribution to history?
He was one of the greatest Renaissance painters. He was on a level with Raphael and Michelangelo and Leonardo. There's a very famous painting that was done of that had all of the philosophers together in one picture called the School of the Philosophers. And if you look in that painting, you'll see El Sadama next to Raphael, and you know, painted into the painting. So he's very famous. Yeah. But here's this man all the way back then saying, you know, I am the Sodomite, and living this extravagant, very what today would be a wild life, but standing up to convention to do something new.
Yeah, in the modern sense, he's like the first person to come out in a way.
Yeah.
My guests are Ian McKinnon and Wendell Jones. The two of them are co-writers of the play Gay Historgy, which is playing in LA every Friday night in July at the Moving Arts Hyperion Station. Ian McKinnon is the solo performer of the play. Now, I understand the play is in two parts. Why is it in two parts?
Well, they were written separately. Wendell and I did part one about a year and a half ago. And then last summer, it was so successful and so fun, and there's so many sexy gay men from history that we were like, oh, we could continue this.
Well, also, when we did part one, we ended it up on this huge dramatic note where we're describing two men being drugged through the streets of Paris, and they're being stoned. People are throwing excrement at them. They're bleeding. They're tortured by this mob. And this is right around the time that Karl Ulrich's comes out and declares himself as a Uranian, or what we would call a homosexual today, in front of this huge congress of psycho doctors and psychologists. And you could be put to death at this time. That's how we ended part one. And we would say, like, why would a person take this risk? Was it just because they wanted to get off and have a little sex? No, it's because there is something powerful in love that urges you on to do something more. So the audiences were crying. We got standing ovations. We'd gotten money from the city of West Hollywood commissioned to help create it. So we did it in West Hollywood. We did it in Santa Monica. We did it in bars. Everywhere we went, people said they wanted to see more. So we decided, what about the search for gay love? And do a whole piece. The second part would really get into the depth of the psychological meaning of what it means to be a gay man and fall in love. So we started going into psychological theory, but all at the same time that we're traveling through time and people are laughing and you're watching this crazy, crazy show that's encouraging people to stand up against conformity, to stand up against the violence in this country, and do something more revolutionary with their gay lives. Much in the way that the early gay liberation movement did.
You know, it's interesting because even if there is much more enlightenment today than there was back a century ago, we still have, you know, things like what's happening in Uganda, for example, with not just criminalization of gay people, but, you know, just laws advocating for their death.
Yeah.
So how far, since you've really explored history, how far have we come? Have we come far enough?
We are a barbaric, primitive people. And I think that there is an obligation to anyone, any gay person, any heterosexual person with heart, to stand up for against the violence against women, against gay people. You know, even in our country, they say we have all these rights. But when I walk down the street in West Hollywood at night, I walk down facing the traffic because people still throw eggs.
In West Hollywood?
Oh, yeah. 6 months ago, I woke up one morning and walked out to Santa Monica Boulevard, and there were broken eggs that had been splattered the night before by bashers who had gone through the area.
Who had gone through the city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In front of the theater, I was standing out with my tech people, and these guys in a van ran by and yelled, you know, effing queers, you know, right at us, you know. So it's still, yeah, there's still a long way to go. And there's so much internalized homophobia that infects the gay community as well. You know, we grow up in this homophobic environment as children. We absorb it. And, you know, it takes work to confront that and look at the homophobia in our own hearts as well.
Yeah. Part of what's different, I think, right now is that there's now a community of people who are trying to work with the gay experience in a new way. So that at Antioch University, there is a whole LGBT specialization that's training people to work as therapists in the LGBT community. For the last 15, 20 years, Ian and I have been where we met up at talks in Plumber Park, where the institute that I work with, the Institute for Contemporary Uranian Psychoanalysis, puts on talks with gay people and 20, 30 people come in on the first Saturday of every month to Plumber Park in West Hollywood, and we talk about what does it mean to become an individual in yourself, to stand up for, you know, a better world.
In a gay way, yeah.
Well, when you were talking about sort of internalized homophobia, whether it's among heterosexuals or gay people themselves, then how much are you does this play, a gay historgy, make a statement about that? Because as you were saying, it's a little bit more than the fight for marriage, right?
The gay experience is much more than that. Yeah. I mean, we support that civil rights, but much, much, much bigger fight, I think.
Well, the show is kind of trippy because it deals with all these very serious themes and seeks to inspire people to get more gay and to find out.
And what do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? By sort of getting more gay, one way being aware of our history and finding the strength and power that is there, and also looking into our own hearts and facing our own homophobia and our own limitations and trying to bring out gay spirit in a more active way.
I think also when we start challenging the sort of collective normative values that are taught in most American families, what happens is when you become more gay, you want to make a world that will encourage people to be individuals, a world that we could live in.
Maybe a more compassionate world. I mean, boys are still told to not act like girls,
sure,
et cetera. Or girls are chastised for being too tomboyish, whatever that means.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So much so. And gay people are taught to compete against each other and to treat each other like commodities. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not commodities. We were put here to love each other and to make a better world.
Yeah. Do you aim the play at all audiences or any specific audience?
Yeah, I think it's for everyone. You know, gay and straight people come and it's
a lot of fun.
It's so fun. It's a comedy and it's multimedia. There's video projection and it's full of lots of beautiful homoerotic imagery and but it's really.
So is there an age limit?
Yes.
How old does one have to be, minimum age?
I don't know. We've never enforced it.
We've never enforced it, but I guess, you know, maybe.
NC-17.
Yeah, I give it that.
There's pornographic imagery in it that we utilize.
That's good to know.
But we also utilize these images to try and imagine that when you're looking at an image, an erotic image, that something is awakening in your heart that corresponds to a psychological growth and expansion. And you don't have to say it that way. When you see it, you're just seeing these hot, gorgeous men and going, oh, wow, that's beautiful. But then you start getting the history and people start getting moved and then you've got people crying and you've got people laughing. And that's a show. That's fun.
Well, I want to wish the two of you best of luck with the show. Wendell Jones, Ian McKinnon, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Wendell Jones and Ian McKinnon are co-writers of A Gay Historgy. Ian is the solo performer, and the play is showing in L.A. every Friday night in July at 8 p.m. at Moving Arts, Hyperion Station, located at 1822 Hyperion Avenue, Los Angeles, California 90027. Tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com. We will post the direct link to where you can get tickets at uprisingradio.org later today.